Hi, Graham. How you doing?
Hi, Mel. I'm good, thanks. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year. I can't believe we're already in 2024.
And a new season of the podcast.
Yeah, which I'm really excited about. So today we have Tracy Bowles, who is a global advisory practice leader at the Hackett Group. So hi, Tracy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Welcome. Let's dive in. It's a new year. Let's go back to, you know, before your career in payroll. One of my favorite questions I like to ask payrollers is if they remember their first payslip for their first job. So not from the first one they ran as a payroller, but Tracy, what was your first payslip and what did you do with the money?
Great question. I don't recall my first payslip, actually. I did work in retail throughout high school. Minimum wage then, I believe, was $5.15. So it probably was not a very large check. But I will say my most memorable check was in college. I worked as a proofreader for the Yellow Pages. And the first week, I remember the check said I worked 92 hours.
Wow.
Obviously, it must have been over summer break. But that check, and I couldn't tell you how much it was, but that 92 hours just sticks in my head. And I felt so empowered by that check, you know, like I was finally getting closer to being fully independent. That check was like dynamite to me. Like it just gave me all these little extra power pods, if you will, like in a video game that, you know, I was going on my way to being fully independent.
I love that. I've never really thought about it through the perspective of the most memorable check. But I'm going to show my age here, Tracy, and I'm just going to ask you, not because I don't remember, but because there may be people listening, Yellow Pages. Just remind us what that was and what you were reading.
Now I really feel old. The Yellow Pages were the section of the phone book, which you had to use because there was no internet, that had the listing of the businesses. So companies would buy ads within the Yellow Pages. So that when you needed, say, a plumber and you went to the plumber section of the Yellow Pages, you picked out the ad that really spoke to you most, whether it's they were 24-hour service or maybe they had a cute little logo. Those were the things that we proofread. And yes, they are dinosaurs now, probably all but extinct.
And wasn't it the book that the strongest man in the world used to rip up because it was that big and that heavy?
Yes, that's a true story. And the pages were so thin and so light. It's like, how could it be so big and so heavy in the end?
I mean, that's a great place when you think about, you know, we're going to talk a little bit in this about how much payroll is changing, how it's changed over your career. And, you know, there's a lot of excitement at the moment around new technologies and how the industry might change quite rapidly. And there's that old saying that people overestimate what will happen in the short term and underestimate what will happen in the long term. And I haven't thought about a Yellow Pages in quite a while. It used to thump on the doormat when it came through, and then it used to float lightly down onto the doormat, and then it just stopped coming. So how the world changes. All right, let's jump forward in time, right? You're through college, you've got your 92-hour paycheck, and you've been investing that, and somehow you end up in payroll. How did that happen? Was it a direct route? Did you leave college going, yep, I'm going to go and work in payroll because it's the place I want to be?
So it didn't actually happen that way, which I'm sure you are not surprised. I actually grew up in an insurance agency because my family is a group of entrepreneurs. My father's sisters both got into insurance. One went into outside sales and one opened her own agency. So I literally grew up either in the agency or out on the sales routes. And on the sales routes, they would have these events at mobile home parks, which are very popular with retirees, which is what Florida is made of. And as a young child, I would go with them on these events to explain to folks who were typically new to the state how insurance worked in the state of Florida, what coverages they would need, what they could expect, et cetera. And all retirees love little kids, right? So I was very popular. And that's really where I learned the heart of service. That was customer service 101 for me. So as I went through my retail jobs throughout high school and then into proofreading in college, that kind of stuck with me, you know, that need to serve as customer service. And somehow I landed in temporary staffing. And then from there, I went into training and recruiting and then service center management. And call centers are a different breed, all their own. And then after I left that role, I had a friend of a friend that needed some help covering a maternity leave at the payroll company that she ran. So I said, okay, I'll go and help for a while. So I helped her out for a while. I remember one day answering the phone as the name of the payroll software, not the name of the payroll company. Mm-hmm. So obviously I wasn't very good at it. But they saw something in me because when the director left, she actually called me to go with her and create a new role for a client service role in their company. And it was with a PEO, which is a professional employer organization. And that's really where I learned payroll, sort of trial by fire, if you will.
And the PEO model is quite unique, I think, to the US. So how would you describe the PEO and maybe in comparison to maybe something like an employer of record that's getting a lot of coverage and media exposure these days?
Sure. Yeah. PEO actually got its start in Bradenton, Florida, which is where I was born and raised. So it is an idea or scheme, as Melanie has taught me, that small employers, which it's typically good for 10 to 100 employees, they don't have time to focus on the administrative pieces of employment. They aren't going to be able to calculate their own payroll. They don't want to pay payroll taxes. They don't want to sit behind a desk when they could be doing their business. That's really why they started it. So the idea of PEO, the professional employer, is that the small business owner can co-employ with the PEO. So the PEO employs the employee on their legal entities. They are employees for payroll, for taxes, for insurance purposes. But the small business owner still hires and directs all of the work. So it's really a great situation for that those small companies where they don't have the overhead in place to manage those administrative pieces or even the experience.
And that would be different from an employer of record, because obviously the employer of record is providing the employment 100% and the company may not even need to have an entity or may not have an entity in the region, if I understand correctly.
Yes. And that's been a really great improvement. You talk about the future of payroll. That's something that's really come into full force in the past few years. And I think COVID had a lot to do with that, where people were moving or branching out. Maybe they needed to be somewhere else to help care for a family member during all of that time, and the employer didn't have a way to employ them in that area. They could go to that employer of record without, like you said, having to have a legal entity in that area and still employ that person that was probably valuable to their company and not run the risk of being out of compliance.
I think that industry has exploded, didn't it, over the last couple of years. It slowed down, but I'm hearing of new EORs every single week.
It's a great concept. I personally actually came in need of an EOR, much to my chagrin, because we had a manager hire someone in Italy. We didn't post a job in Italy. We didn't have an Italy job offer or a contract. And we were scurrying. I'm like, I cannot pay someone in Italy. We just aren't set up for this. And Italy has quite stringent requirements for creating a new legal entity and setting up shop there. And our executives just were not keen about the personal guarantees that came along with that. So an employer of record was really the best option and quite a quick option for us to get them employed correctly and get them to work.
Hear that story so often where the payroll manager director will be told of a new employment in some country. So you're right, the EOR does definitely help with that. I think like 6-7 years ago it was a complete nightmare, but yeah, you're right, that solution does help.
It does. It's not inexpensive, but it is an option.
So we're getting ahead of ourselves a little in terms of some of the industry trends and other bits and pieces. So, but you came in on this PEO and this is how you learned about payroll. And you then seem to have stayed in payroll or the payroll related space for the rest of your career and the moves and, you know, who knows what's to come next, but, you know, a lot of achievements in your career through payroll. What was it about payroll that made you stay? Why is it interesting? Why is it still something that you're working on?
I think for me, my career in payroll has been two sides. I typically lean toward the client service side within payroll or the technical side. Give me a spreadsheet of numbers and leave me alone for a while. I will be happy as a clam. Put me in front of a client and let me talk payroll. I'll be happy as a clam. So I like the two different sides. And that's kind of how my career has gone. I've gone from more of a client-facing role in the PEO industry, then into the technical operations and back and forth, and even more so into tax. And tax really got my attention. It's so intricate. You know, we are one country here in the U.S., but we have 50 plus different entities for tax. They get to create their own tax laws, whether it be income tax, payroll tax, insurance requirements, and we have to comply with all of that in this one small space. Then you add the other countries in as you expand and go globally, and everything changes. So that really caught my attention and gave me more to learn, a deeper dive, if you will, into payroll. So I'm always learning.
And can you remember the first time you encountered kind of that global difference? So I think looking at your career, you've done a lot of work in North America and were focused on North America. And then there's this moment where you begin to get exposed to global payroll or global entities. Can you remember what that was and perhaps talk us through how that came about?
Sure. So I spent about 8.5 years within PEO. And then I moved on to HRO. So these were the larger, more global clients. And that's really where I got my first taste. I wasn't required to be responsible for the global piece yet, but I was able to learn from these larger, more sophisticated companies how they approached the global pieces and how complex they were. So I got kind of an arm's length view there before I had to really dive in and tackle it myself.
And then do you remember the first, I mean, was it instantly global, multiple countries, or was it kind of one country at a time added? And do you remember which the first countries were? And
it was more of a slow pace. Obviously, Canada being right next door is typically the first one that we deal with. So I did take on Canada kind of early. And we laugh because Canada really needs a secret decoder ring for a lot of their things. That we didn't have built yet. So taking my notes and scribbling, I like to create spreadsheets that give me kind of a chart of how to approach things and just figuring out their premiums, their overtimes and their holidays was a challenge for me. You know, in the US, our holidays are not required. They are a benefit of the company, if you will, a paid holiday. The rest of the world doesn't see it that way. So that was very eye-opening in my career. That we were the outliers in that area.
And it's been interesting to see just how many times compliance around paid holidays becomes an issue in different countries. So, you know, how it leads to miscalculation of wages. You know, there's been news articles in multiple countries around the world where the regulatory authority does an investigation and says, hang on a second, there's multiple companies not following best practice or in compliance with the standards. So it's clearly a complex and fraught area and one that it's easy to get caught out on.
It is. Maybe they should adopt that secret decoder ring idea, you know, give those out up front so everyone understands.
Well, so I think that's an interesting point because, you know, you talked earlier about, you know, the technical side of payroll. And, you know, as more and more companies start thinking about their payroll globally, there's a greater and greater level of understanding. And some of that's baked into technology and some of it allows people to use technology to do new things. So over your experience, what's your reflections of the way that payroll technology itself is developing?
I think it's very interesting to see the different directions that different companies are going with their technology. Some are diving very deeply into the compliance piece, if you will. Some of them can calculate every possible aspect of a tax, which is greatly appreciated by the tax folks. Some you kind of have to extrapolate yourself. Some are more geared toward the services side, right? They're more geared toward the employee experience. than maybe that granular level of calculation. A lot of them are getting much easier to run, which is fantastic. You know, the sending and receiving from the mainframes are hopefully behind me. I would like to hope that most of those have been sunset or are being sunset as we speak. Because payroll, I think, while in other countries, monthly is the typical schedule that you see, especially across Europe. In the US, we have even weekly payrolls. And I think the drive to be paid more frequently will be there, probably more from an employee standpoint than an employer. But the employees are going to drive that demand. We're already seeing it. And I'm probably jumping ahead of you, Graham, but with the earned wage access movement, I can remember where I was and my maybe a little dramatic reaction when my boss said, hey, Walmart's doing this new thing with daily payment. We need to look at that. My heart sank. My shoulders shrunk down. And I'm like, we struggle enough with biweekly payroll for 35,000 employees. How in the world are we going to do this? And my tax brain was like, we can't do that. That'll never work. We'll never be able to pay it on time. But they're making it happen, right? Mm-hmm. So you take something that I just can't even imagine, and you put it out there and you make it work, and it becomes the standard. I can't say that earned wage access is the standard yet, but we do see in a lot of companies where they have a large frontline population that does a lot of maybe project work, where they will stay with a job if they have earned wage access and maybe won't make that jump to a company that doesn't have it. So on the recruiting side, we do see that it's moving the dial, which is so interesting to me to see where payroll might go. I had a boss in my first real PEO job who was a visionary, and he said, you know what? We need to make payroll so simple that they can walk up to a kiosk with their time card and we can print out a paycheck.
And it's actually leapt ahead of that because it's almost getting to the point of being able to make the payment, not just print out the paycheck, which is one of the odd things. So I'm based in the UK, and it's fascinating to me that there's all this innovation happening in the US, and EWA has been, you know, earlier adopter in the US in a market that still relies largely on a paper paycheck. Do you see those two things being related? Is it because the market was still on a paper paycheck and many other countries have moved to direct deposit and electronic banking and other ways of working, that EWA met a different pain point in the States? Or do you think it just fascinates me that you've got this one quite legacy way of doing it matched to quite an innovative and future way of doing it?
You know, I think there's two sides to that coin. So as a payroller, it was our hope that we could get more off of a paper check if we offered the earned wage access, because it would be more of a direct electronic payment, whether it be to a pay card or to their bank account. It has baffled me as to why the employees wanted to stay on a paper check, because when we have times in the US like we're having today, the weather is bad in many states. They're asking them to stay home. How can we get that paper check to them on payday? How can they get to the bank to do anything with it? There is the mobile deposit today. So I have always struggled to understand the employee's viewpoint on why they like that paper check, but they really do. And it's different populations. We struggled with a group in my last role. We couldn't get them above 75% adoption of electronic payment. We would send notices after payroll ran. Hey, we have direct deposit. We have pay card. How can we help you get onto this so your payment isn't delayed? And we couldn't move the dial.
One of the things that we're finding in the UK specifically, and then when I go to maybe Ireland and talk about earned wage access, it seems to be the payroll people. You know, like you said at the beginning, you were shocked. It's still going on. So I was in Dublin in the summer and I was talking about earned wage access. And again, there was people gasping at the table because maybe the news hadn't got out so far. How long did it take for the payroll industry in the USA to become more accepting of that scheme, or is the payroll industry still coming to terms with it?
I would say they're still divided. very divided. So we talk to people every day in different companies. They all have different viewpoints. And it's interesting to see that the divide is for the same reason. So their first argument is it's going to be too administratively burdensome. But their second argument is employee financial wellness. There's a camp that says earned wage access will be beneficial to their financial wellness. And the other camp says it will be detrimental to their financial wellness to pay them more frequently than they're paid today. So it's hard to reconcile the differences on the same topic. There are numbers that say earned wage access has helped reduce the reliance on payday loans, which really are a very heavy negative effect on an employee's financial wellness because of the fees. The cost of the payday loans are just exorbitant. And then they get into that cycle where they can't make it to the next payday because they had to pay that one back. Now they have to take another one. So if you can break that cycle for those people, hugely beneficial. On the other side of that, if you start training people that they get paid immediately, they're going to get smaller pieces of payment, right? So maybe they're not good at keeping that money until those payments are due. That could be negatively impactful. However, we're in a society now that's really moving to that gig economy, right? We've got influencers. They're getting checks in the mail, so to speak, deposits into their account that aren't withholding taxes. So those folks have to be smart about how they spend that money too. So maybe as a whole, we're shifting into, instead of that one big paycheck every month, we're getting smaller pieces more frequently, and we have to get better at managing our money.
I think it's one of those things that even if you do or don't agree with it, what it has done is made people think about how frequent you're getting paid. And I do think it's going to change the way that people are going to get paid. It started that conversation, hasn't it? So we had RTI, what was it, 10 years ago? It was something that the government implemented. And I remember everyone just being so angry, and we had meetings with HMRC, and, you know, there wasn't a riot, but it was very an enthusiastic meeting. And then 10 years or so on, people are like, I'm so glad it's happened. You know, just it's been a benefit, shall I say. And so maybe this is this time where 10 years down the line, we'll actually see a different way that people are getting paid.
I agree. And I think as the companies who are offering earned wage access have made it easier for the payroll teams to administer or be hands off completely with the requests and the funding, et cetera, it will become more prevalent because it will be something that companies can start to see the experience that other companies are having positively by offering that. Or it will become such a competitive component that they just won't be able to ignore it.
And it'll certainly be interesting to see as that rolls out across different economies and different cultures in different legislative landscapes. You know, how is the tax man or woman in each individual country going to think about a payment, and when does tax need to be taken, and when does it need to be calculated? Do the systems exist to do that? And then culturally, just interesting that polarizing debate about financial wellness and thinking about the role that the state plays in many European nations around guiding and shaping the way that their citizens think about the way they spend their money and how they get their money. So it's definitely going to be different in every country, which is one of the joys around global payroll. It's a constant learning process of different countries, different cultures, different experiences. Although those fundamentals of getting paid still largely remain the same, right? There's only three or four emotions around getting paid: relief, joy, frustration. We're all, at the end of the day, all human in terms of how we think about it. But so, okay, so we've talked a little bit about some of the technology advancements, particularly in the US. We should probably bring it a little bit more up to date with your career, because you've mentioned a few times we, but we haven't talked yet about the role you're doing today. So let's bring ourselves up to date with your career experience, and then we can talk a little bit more about what you're seeing in the industry and the direction.
Sure. So when I went into HRO, I actually went to Ceridian as their payroll tax manager. they were relocating from Raleigh, North Carolina to St. Petersburg, Florida. So they were doing quite a bit of hiring. And it was a big difference for me. So I did have a tax background within PEO, but it's much different, right? You are reconciling and paying taxes for the PEO's legal entities. When you move into HRO and the outsourcing side, you're reconciling and paying taxes for the client accounts. So it's a much larger service role, getting them to understand and show them exactly what's happened, walking them through their reconciliations and maybe the tax notices, et cetera. So that was a great learning experience for me. And one of my favorite stories in my career was my first day on the job. My boss takes myself and another new hire to lunch. And he says, oh, by the way, I have these two small teams that need managers. So I was going to give them out to each of you. There's a GL team and a garnishments team. And I can't even spell GL. I do not have an accounting background in any way. So I'm like, okay, I'll take the garnishments side. I'm familiar with child supports and tax levies, et cetera. That team was two people in the U.S. They took over my entire life. It was a huge learning because the person that had all of the tribal knowledge, if you will, from the old location was terminated in the middle of a relocation to St. Petersburg. So that knowledge was lost. Most of the processing of them was done by a third party in India. So we had to learn from them all of our own processes, get the team up to speed, keep the balls in the air, because if you drop the ball on a garnishment, the client's on the hook for that money. Couldn't let that happen. So we worked day and night to establish that department in the new location. Then we decided we were going to move it from India to Mauritius. Ceridian has an offshore team in Mauritius, quite large team. So we got everything ready for that and spent 9 weeks in Mauritius. I was there for 4 weeks. We had another team that went in ahead of us. We had a week overlap. It was the most amazing experience I've ever had. We got to sit down with them and really teach them U.S. garnishments, which were completely foreign to them. And about a week in, we realized they have no idea how to format an address or a date for the U.S. because we do everything wonky, right? So we kind of had to backpedal and say, okay, sorry. They really didn't know anything about U.S. processes, but they were so open and so smart, and they grasped everything very quickly. And it was a huge success, so much so that this garnishment team that operated within the HR outsourcing division of Ceridian started selling outside of that model to the SaaS model clients because they want to do their own payroll. They don't want to do their own garnishments. By the time I left that team, we had equal size. We had just as many SaaS model clients as we had HRO clients. So it actually turned into a moneymaker team that I ridiculously and unwittingly accepted on my first day at lunch.
I love that. Unwittingly accepted and then made something of it. I love it. That's great. And, you know, hey, 4 weeks in Mauritius, that's the unspoken side effect of working in global payroll is it's global. So people get to travel, they get to mingle with different communities. I think it's fascinating. Just that reset that you went through. So you're 1 week in and suddenly it's like, oh, things that we take for granted, things that we just know, we now have to articulate and communicate. And that's often such a part of a transformation story. There's so much institutional knowledge or so much localized knowledge that when you move into new geographies or you start to do things differently, that relearning process from the different perspective in order to be successful is a key part of it. And so, you know, congratulations to you for getting that moment of realization and then building something that obviously scaled effectively in the business. But then obviously it came time to move on. You're not still in that role. So what triggered that and how did the journey look from there?
We relocated to North Florida for my husband's job. Virtual work wasn't as common as it is now. So I had to move within Ceridian to go into a a virtual role to work outside of St. Petersburg. So that was back into HRO because I had gone into health and welfare with Ceridian to create their new service structure and manage a team of service delivery managers to try to bring all of their offerings together. They're very siloed at the time. So when I moved to Jacksonville area, it wasn't long before Northgate Orenzo called. I was essentially in their backyard and they needed a payroll tax director. So another perfect example of where I went from a client service role within the health and welfare side back to payroll tax. So I went to work with them for a while. And then I decided it was probably time for me to move away from outsourcing. My entire career, I'd had a great opportunity to see so many different companies and how they work and how they think, but we were upholding their policies and enforcing their policies. And I really wanted an opportunity to create my own policies. I had my own ideas, after 14 years in outsourcing of how I would do it myself, right? Everyone thinks they can do things a little differently when they're in charge. And I got the opportunity to go to Acosta and lead their global payroll. They had just gotten into an RFP where they decided on new vendors. They were going to switch 5 systems all at once. And it was quite an undertaking. They were very heavy into acquisition work. But it was an amazing experience for me. And I had another kind of learning where I was accustomed to being surrounded by people who understood payroll. Maybe they didn't know how to calculate a paycheck by hand, but they understood payroll because we were all in the payroll business, right? When I got to Acosta, I realized I had to kind of start at a different place when we started talking on different topics, because just because our tax person in finance knew taxes didn't mean they understood the employment tax side of it and how things were calculated and withheld. They were far more on the filing side. So it really taught me that you have to know your audience at all times, even if it's not in a client-facing role. You know, your internal partners really need to understand where you're coming from so that they can understand the passion behind your request. So I knew when I went in that I had to create those relationships across the organization, because I learned that from my clients within outsourcing. We had a company that was very stern on their payroll tax strategy. They would not allow hiring managers to hire in an area where they didn't already have a tax account. So if they didn't have Nexus there, they couldn't expand there without lengthy approval process, which was something I hadn't really seen a company be effective at. So that was one of the first things I wanted to sit down and understand internally what their approach was, if they had one, and what their appetite was to create one so that we weren't filing single employee returns for half of our workload. But that was a really big deal for me to build that and really get a seat at the table, if you will. So in building those relationships within Acosta, I was brought to the table early for mergers, acquisitions, even on the bankruptcy. They went through a reorganization, and I was very surprised how much work that would really be for payroll. And luckily, they trusted me. They worked well with me enough to bring me under the tent early so we could have a plan so that our employees were not impacted in any way by that shift.
And Mel, I think that's really positive to hear. You know, we've talked about, does payroll have a seat at the table? What role does payroll play in those conversations? Do the other members of the executive or business decision-making group understand the payroll implications? It sounds like that by being brought in to lead a global payroll, there was an organization there that had understood it had challenges and knew that it was going to need help, but then was very open to you building that network and relationship to pull your own chair up to the table, if you like, and say, right, I'm here now. This is what we're going to do, and getting involved. And M&A can be so complex for a payroll function and often on really short notice. So just anything you would share to someone who's in an M&A oriented business, what was the key to building that relationship and getting the early visibility that you were able to get?
I like to use the new hire card as long as possible. So go in, learn who those people are within the organization, and put time on their calendar. Doesn't matter how many levels above you they are, they're likely going to accept a new hire orientation meeting. Play that card. Learn them, learn what their objectives are within their role. If it's expansion of the company through acquisition, you need to become someone that they lean on. Same with tax. You know, I spent a lot of time, we had regular meetings just to touch base. What's going on your side? What are you seeing on your side? So that we could keep in lockstep our approach for employment tax and corporate tax. We never wanted to be out of sync. Same with global partners. So many times organizations will allow different regions or countries to operate on their own. It still comes back to me as the global payroll process owner. So it was important for me to understand kind of what drove them and made them tick so that I could make their lives easier, right? If I could help identify what might be a barrier in their objectives from a payroll standpoint, I could make recommendations. And they would either take those recommendations or they would table it. And then when it became a problem, they would come back to me and say, hey, so this is happening. How can we tackle it now?
I love the new hire thing, because we've spoken to obviously many women in payroll, and they a few people have spoken about know your audience. You know, doesn't matter where you are, know your audience. There's definitely two things there, isn't it? Use the new hire card. I think that's really good, and get to know your audience. And it's great that you. That worked, didn't it? Because you got a seat to the table. You've proven that does work.
Absolutely. It's becoming a trusted advisor to those folks so that when that it is top of mind for them that, oh yes, this will impact payroll. Let me call Tracy. And it worked. And it was really helpful in getting in early to help assuage any of those risks that may have come up.
So Tracy, you use that phrase "learn them," which I think is fascinating, because it's very much about learning the individual, understanding what makes them tick. And it made me think about something you said earlier on, just about that split in your sort of payroll personality between that client service side, right? The early days on the selling the insurance and listening to the client, right through to then the more technical side. And that's an unusual combination. There is a stereotype that a payroller is more comfortable on the technical side, but because I guess you came up through the PEO, through the outsourcing, through the service business, you've always been surrounded by payrollers. So that client service piece was a skill that you built there. So I just thought it was a lovely learn them, play the new hire card, and then bring that breadth of your skills, your whole self, right? We talk about bring your whole self to work, but that is your two strengths allied into a single set of conversations with the stakeholders. So yeah, it's sometimes interesting to hear the practicalities of how you get that seat at the table, because for a lot of payroll functions it isn't, people don't think to have the conversation and know that it will impact payroll.
Yeah, good point. I mean, if you're helping them with their objectives, they're more inclined to understand where you fit in, right? But it really is that service piece, because we do provide a service not just to the employees but to the corporation as a whole.
And so then, to bring it bang up to date, you left that role and moved on to the kind of consulting side and service provision side. And tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and where you sit.
So now I'm back in the client mix, which I didn't realize how much I missed. So it's so much fun, if you will, to sit and talk to companies and understand their challenges and say, oh, I've seen that one. You better watch out for this pothole or that pothole. And this is how I've seen other companies tackle it. So we're in a really great area where we do advisory. So the Hackett Group has traditional consulting, where we come in, we're boots on the ground, hands on keys to help people with their payroll initiatives. But on my side of the house, it's an advisory membership. So we have all the tools of consulting. We have all the intellectual property that the Hackett Group has built over 30 years of their benchmarking to share with our members so that they can use it to then go forth and do their own work. So they'll come to us, maybe they're looking to create a new scorecard, just for example. So we'll go over with them, you know, what scorecards are really intended to do, what they can accomplish with different audiences. You want to not only educate your immediate leadership on how you're doing as a payroll organization, you also want to educate your executive leadership on how you're adding value or minimizing risk for the organization. Then you also want to report to your partners how you're doing and how they can help you. Payroll does not operate in a vacuum. We are fully dependent on other areas to bring us accurate, actionable data for us to then pay the employees accurately and timely. So we talk to them about how to make them more effective. We talk to them about strategy. Maybe they're in a regional model now and they want to go to a global model. So we'll talk to them about global strategy. We have our benchmarking data that shows top performing companies have that global payroll strategy. Regardless of how they deliver their payroll, they're really focused on that global viewpoint from a policy standpoint. And those are the things that we get to guide them through. And they're all in different areas of or different levels on their journey. They've either just started or they're in the middle. Some have gone quite a ways through their plan just to realize that it's not really going to fit their organization. Companies change as they age, evolve. The way they do business today is not the same way they did business even 10 years ago. So it's important that payroll organizations can adapt and pivot their approach and their strategy, even midstream. And that doesn't make it a failure, right? You want to always be adapting to meet the organization's needs, all the while getting your employees paid accurately and timely.
And that almost swims counter to the current of if it ain't broke, don't fix it, which I think has been said a long time in payroll functions.
True.
it's where somebody's had the horror and then the horror story or heard the horror story or been through the horror story and they don't want to try again, but they have to.
Yeah, a little PTSD there sometimes. Agree.
I think the thing is the global industry has changed so much. I mean, obviously it's changed since COVID, but if you look back at 10 years, how much the industry has changed, how much the providers have changed, companies. I think if somebody did have a challenge, things have changed even over the last 2 years.
Yes, quite dramatically. It's really amazing to see the global payroll community as a whole and see them work together. You know, you talk about technology and providers. We don't truly have that one global payroll yet. I think it will come, but it really depends on the complexity of the local requirements. That's the piece that really hasn't changed. It's become more complex, but it really hasn't taken a change. Most areas, countries, localities put the onus on the employer to collect their taxes, to collect their social insurances, maybe cover their sick leave pieces. And it's a lot. So I think advocacy for that is growing to if we're not going to lessen the burden on the employer, let's make it a little simpler if we can as we go. That's what I would really like to see in the future of payroll. There's all these needs that need to be met. The employer seems to be the target for those needs. So let's make it easier, whether that be through technology or through collaboratively coming together on the requirements. How can we do this more systematically across the board, which is a little more unlikely? So it's nice to be in this seat in the consulting side to be able to really observe where technology is going and how that will really help employers streamline and become more efficient.
To be fair, I think it's hard for providers, technology, because the governments all around the world will just throw out something new. And then the technology guys have 6 months, a year, to get it right, haven't they?
some of the hangover from COVID is definitely accelerating government decision timelines, yeah. And what used to be 6-month industry consultation periods have definitely been shrinking. And I think it's a really interesting point, Tracy, you talk about the need for a global strategy. And certainly in the last 3 or 4 years, that recognition that parts of payroll are global, right? There's only so many employee emotions. When we talk about creating employee experience, there's only so many emotions that payroll creates and the effective delivery of payroll creates. They are consistent across cultures and cross borders. And potentially 70-80% of the way you actually run payroll can be standardized and, you know, follows a common process. But at the same time as that realization has been spreading, so too has the increase in local complexity. To Mel's point, the increase in short notice regulatory changes, or things that are signaled a long way ahead in certain countries out in Asia, they're signaled a long way ahead, but the change actually comes in overnight. And it's often clarified only a couple of days before the change comes in. So there is that, how do you create a strategic umbrella and strategic consistency? And then how do you move with agility through each of those deep local, you need the deep local expertise to be able to adapt to the regulation. And it's definitely, I think, driving the industry to be better, driving the industry to advance, to think about how technology solves those problems, and where technology isn't the answer, that it's actually about deep local expertise and local people. You know, there are still many, many countries. I made the comment earlier about US paychecks, but there are many, many countries around the world where a single piece of paper still needs to be taken into a physical location and stamped by a relevant authority. So it's a as we say, it's a complex area, but it's endlessly fascinating. We're headed into the sort of latter part and running out of time a little bit, but I do, Tracy, you've touched on managers a couple of times. You mentioned a visionary, a technology visionary who saw a different way of doing payroll. Who was the best manager? You don't need to name names, but just to describe, you know, the best manager and what made them the best manager on your career journey? Because I think that's something everybody can learn from as well as people move into management. What are the role models? What does good look like? So from your experience, share something about, you know, working for the best manager you've worked with.
So two come to mind, and for completely different reasons. One, very calm, yet very assertive, if you will, had that presence about him. He didn't overreact. He listened. Even though he didn't understand payroll, and most people just don't want to understand payroll if that's not their career, but he would listen. He would challenge my ideas, which I love. And then we would move forward together. We could disagree in his office and argue a point out, and he would listen and I would listen. And then we would move forward with whatever was decided. And that was very helpful for me to be successful in my role, because he helped me take it even farther than what I was able to establish on my own. The other one I would say is someone that was a little more frustrating. I remember a time where I received an email from him and I hopped up from my desk and I just marched. And we had a very open area, and it was quite a ways that I marched across tile in my high heels. And my team was like, oh no. And I marched to his office and I slammed my fist on his desk, and I could talk to him that way. And we had a great rapport. He was very frustrating at times, but he challenged me in ways that I hadn't been challenged before and kind of helped develop me in a small amount of time into a better leader. He even came to me when I worked for him in another area of the organization and said, do you remember when we had a tough time getting along when you first started? And I laughed. I just busted out laughing. Like, I can't believe he actually put that into words. He's like, could you talk to our new hire? She's struggling in communicating with me. So I learned a lot about knowing your audience and how to talk to people. So they were both equally great, but for completely different reasons.
And then, if you were to look back, what advice would you offer your younger self?
Oh, wow. Stay curious. I have a natural need to know things. So I need to know not only my job, but I need to know the the upstream pieces before my job starts. And then I need to know the downstream pieces of where my job goes. And that helps me be better at creating policy and making the rules or decisions because I understand where I fit in the ecosystem. I did have a boss that was very frustrated with my need to know everything. So it's not for everyone, but it has served me very well. And sometimes I've had a tendency to quell that need to ask those questions and be curious about things. But when I do travel down that path, it works out for the better across the board. So I would say to my younger self to stay curious.
Well, we're coming. Thanks so much, Tracy. We're coming to an end of today's podcast, which is really sad. I just love the idea of you as a young girl walking around talking to the older generation and how that communication that you learn at such a young age has almost like done you. That's one of the best skill sets to ever have, isn't it? And that's followed you through and mostly got you jobs, mostly got you into payroll, didn't it? Because you had such great communication skills and it's followed you through to today. And I'd just love to see that young Tracy talking to old people.
It was actually a requirement for a job that I took within the PEO industry, tax reported up through finance. And it was also a piece of employee facing. And they're like, look, we're finance. We don't have that warm and fuzzy side. So we need you to come in and take this over.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Tracy. Thanks so much, Graham. It's really lovely to see you today. And we'll hope to see you again very soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
This podcast is made possible by ADP Global Payroll, giving you the confidence and transparency to transform global payroll into an engine for growth. Begin your journey at adp.com/worldwide and connect with your local global expert.